Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to American Family Radio. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano, and joining us down in the studio is Steve Paisley Jordahl. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, everybody.
Steve, we talked to Fred last hour about D-Day.
Yes.
June the 6th. And
80 years ago today.
Take it away.
Well, you guys, I listened, and you guys had some wonderful coverage of that. I've been long a student of, you're not a fan of the war, but I've been a student of World War II. Got that from my dad, I think, the love of strategy in the conflict and the greatest generation that was there. And I came across a podcast that's called The Warrior Next Door, and it's hosted by two guys, one's in Colorado, one's in Oklahoma, but they're best friends, and they've been doing this kind of stuff. They interview veterans, and they've been doing it for a number of years, and they have a number of World War II veterans that they have interviewed, and one of the guys' names is Bill Parker. I put this piece together. This is similar to the one that's airing on our news, except this is longer. You're going to hear from Bill Parker. Bill Parker may have been the first soldier, American soldier, to put his foot down on Omaha Beach.
Wow.
And he was certainly among the first wave, and it was really early. And he was part of an engineering team, three people that were tasked with going to the cliffs and blowing a hole in the barbed wire so that it could release things. And so let's just, I want you to hear what I put together on this. You're going to hear from Ryan Fairfield, who's part of this, does the interviews for this podcast. And they were fortunate to be able to go back to Normandy with Bill Parker several years. Wow. Bill Parker died since, but and visit some of the places where Bill Parker was hailed as a hero. It's amazing the reverence that these people have for the greatest generation. But I just would love to have you guys hear this cut seven.
Thursday, June 6th, was the 80th anniversary of the most massive, audacious, and bloody but ultimately successful military invasion in history. D-Day threw the flower of American youth into the teeth of the mighty Nazi war machine. General Dwight D. Eisenhower sent the men off toward the French coast, many to certain death.
Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force, you are about to embark upon the great crusade toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you. I have full confidence in your courage, devotion to duty, and skill in battle. We will accept nothing less than full victory. Good luck, and let us all beseech the blessing of Almighty God upon this great and noble undertaking.
Allied pool reporter George Hicks recorded the actual sound of the battle from the deck of the USS Ancon, a troop transport ship sailing off the coast in the English Channel. Private Bill Parker, later promoted to sergeant, was one of the first soldiers to plant his boots on bloody Omaha Beach.
And I went across the beach with a machine gun hitting the ground 3 foot in front of me, just knocking up sand, and I couldn't stop. Couldn't get any faster. He never did raise his eye enough to hit me. We had to go across that water. We couldn't go back. There wasn't nothing behind us. Mm-hmm. So we had to go forward.
He was an engineer assigned to blow a hole in the barbed wire at the base of the cliffs. It was a miracle he survived.
After we got the wire blowed, we looked back, and there was nobody behind us. The landing craft we were on had, I think, 33 more soldiers, plus the Navy, and it blew up, and they were all killed right there.
Parker says one reason they did survive is that the captains on board some of the Navy ships that were part of the greatest armada ever assembled on that day disobeyed direct orders. They'd been told not to get their ships too close to the shore, lest the Germans open up their big guns and sink them right in the shallow waters just off the beach. Parker says they made a different call.
Seeing we was hung up, he ordered the battleships in close to shore, lowered their big guns, and he shot about 6, 7 feet, 8 over our heads, knocked them pillboxes out, and he turned us loose. I give the Navy credit for saving the invasion.
Ryan Fairfield interviewed Parker for his Warrior Next Door podcast. He and co-host Tony Lupo had been collecting interviews for the Veterans History Project at the Library of Congress for years, and says the term Greatest Generation fits the remarkable men and women who fought in World War II.
That generation grew up, they were forged in fire with the Depression. They knew it was like to chip in with their family and work doing something at 7, 8, 9, 10 years of age, delivering papers, that sort of thing. When the war broke out, that sort of mentality just kind of took over. And, you know, you couldn't stop these guys from signing up for the military at that time.
He says, like most World War II veterans, Parker kept his story locked up in his body and mind for years, but in the end knew he needed to share it with the world.
They wanted their story to be a learning situation for anybody that comes behind them. And we've got a lot of younger kids that are listening to the show that are learning from it. And that's really what we were hoping, is that we can get a younger generation to realize this isn't ancient history.
Parker died last year at the age of 98, but Fairfield and Lupo got to accompany him back to Normandy in 2022. This was an army band recorded at one of the ceremonies that weekend. Fairfield says the trip back to Normandy was healing for Bill Parker.
During his visit, he said that he saw in his mind's eye all those bodies on the beach all over again. A few days later, he went to the American Cemetery. There he was able to stand at an overlook, looking down on Omaha Beach, where young kids and families were playing on the busy beach, very near the spot where he landed. He said that the previous night was the first time since the war had ended that he slept without nightmares of the dead on the beach.
80 years ago, Bill Parker hit Omaha Beach amid a hail of machine gun fire, stared down death, survived, and helped lead the march across Europe that would free the world from Hitler's evil ambitions on June 6, 1944. I'm Steve Jordahl.
Excellent piece there, Steve.
Amen. Really, really good. And by the way, folks, that is the kind of thing that the Lord allows us to do at American Family News.
Yeah.
Right? So check it out at American. You can go to afa.net and you can click on American Family News and get linked in with that as a Christian news source.
Yeah, that whole piece is posted up on our AFN website.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, excellent job there. He mentioned he was telling the story. He said he credits the Navy.
Yeah.
For victory on D-Day.
I'd never heard that recounted.
Is what he's saying, what I understood him to be saying, is that the Navy ships decided in the moment to draw closer to the shoreline than they were told to.
Yeah.
Because they wanted to, be able to attack the German positions. Is that right?
Yes,
more accurate.
Which protected more Americans, and that's when he was saying they were firing 6 feet over our head.
Yeah.
He's talking about our own battleships doing that, true?
Correct. They had tried to offload tanks and other heavy equipment that was going to do the job of taking out those pillboxes and everything, but it was so...
What's a pillbox?
A pillbox is a big concrete structure that is built. It's usually reinforced concrete. Some of the walls are...
Germans were in fortified positions.
Yeah, you've seen the movies.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
With those slits.
Yeah, that's what they're called, pillboxes. Yeah.
Pillboxes. And so they didn't want... Now the Germans had some heavy guns, but they were pointed in the wrong direction. But we didn't know that. And so they were told, the Navy was told, keep your ships like 2 or 3 miles out so that you can not get shot. If you get sunk right there, then it's going to, not only will you lose a ship, but you're going to block other people from coming in. Well, the captain there saw the carnage on the beach and how much it was costing him and the difficulty that they were having. He says, well, heck with that, I'm going. So pulled his ship close, lowered the guns, and fired. Bill Parker, to the day he died, had hearing damage because of those bombs exploding that close to over his head. But got those pillboxes out. I've been to Normandy. I've been once, and it is one of the most awesome, inspiring, humbling things I've ever done.
All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, and Steve. Well, there was a interview that former President Trump did with Fox News. Did a lengthy interview. I guess it was last Sunday. One of the questions that he was asked about was his prayer life, his faith. Mm-hmm. And so he answered it. So what we're about to hear is from last Sunday. I think it was from last Sunday. Maybe it was aired yesterday, but it was originally, the interview was from last Sunday on Fox News. And it's a lady reporter. What's her name? Do you know her name? I don't know her name.
I don't know. I'll look it up.
Okay, it's a lady reporter. One of the anyway, here's how that went.
Cut four.
Relationship with God like, and how do you pray? That's Sharon from Alabama.
Okay, so I think it's good. I do very well with the evangelicals. I love the evangelicals. And I have more people saying they pray for me. I can't even believe it. And they are so committed, and they're so believing. They say, sir, you're going to be okay. I pray for you every night. I mean, everybody, almost, I can't say everybody, but almost everybody that sees me, they say it. It's such a beautiful thing. You know what's a beautiful thing, too? When you look at all of this bad stuff going on, they have nothing to look up to. They have no God. They have no anything. They kill people. They beat people. They push people into subways. There's just nothing there. Religion is such a great thing. It keeps you, you know, there's something to be good about. You want to be good. You want to. It's so important. And I don't know if it's explained right. I don't know if I'm explaining it right now. But when you have something like that, you want to be good. You want to go to heaven. Okay? You want to go to heaven. If you don't have heaven, you almost say, oh, what's the reason? Yeah. Why do I have to be good? Let's not be good. What difference does it make?
Right? Anyway, that was from last week. A couple, three things about that. That's not the gospel of Christ, okay? I'm not trying to put President Trump down. He doesn't understand. He calls it religion and things like that, which is, he says some things that are true,
right.
Okay, that are accurate. But the gospel message is that you can never be good enough
right.
to go to heaven, right? That's why we must repent of our sin and give our lives to Christ.
That's why Jesus died on a cross.
Because we can't work our way to heaven.
Right.
Okay. So but I think most of our listeners understand that. Another thing, but you said this morning in our show meeting, the president there, he was very inarticulate there, stumbled around. But the one thing he did say was true.
Yeah. First of all, one of the things I wanted to mention to people is the president does not appear to understand the gospel, but he does appreciate, seemed genuine. Those seemed like very genuine comments on his part, how it made him feel to know that people were praying for him. So I wanted to, first of all, encourage people to continue praying for him. And continue praying for Donald Trump, the man, to come to a saving knowledge of
right.
Christ, because I don't think he understands
no,
the real gospel.
That's clear.
However, I also wanted to mention the fact that what he was articulating there at the end is exactly the view our founders had about the importance. George Washington, in his farewell address in 1796, said that political prosperity depends on the two pillars of religion and morality.
Yep.
That if you're going to have a politically prosperous nation, people have to behave according to scriptural principles. They have to control themselves, and religion and morality helps that happen. And he seemed to understand that without those, that Christian influence in our country cannot continue on, because right, people have no motivation to behave themselves.
Right, right. The humorous part of that was, as I mentioned to you, Ed, before,
yeah,
I get tickled every time I hear Trump talk about, quote, the evangelicals.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's like we're monkeys at the zoo on Monkey Island, you know, and he looks over there and goes, hey, look, there's the evangelicals. I love them. Aren't
and they love me.
Aren't they cute? But play the first part of that, because that is listen to how he says the even. He's not meaning anything disrespectful.
Oh, no, no.
I mean, he's...
It's affectionate, it seems
yes,
like to
yes,
me.
But listen about the evangelicals.
...relationship with God-like, and how do you pray? That's Sharon from Alabama.
Okay, so I think it's good. I do very well with the evangelicals. I love the evangelicals.
Stop. It's clear that he recognizes that politically he's nowhere without, quote unquote, the evangelicals. But it is a funny way to express it, the evangelicals,
right?
You know,
right. Like we're the Eskimos. Something. Got the Eskimos over there. Got those cute little evangelicals over there. I love those guys.
Yeah,
they love me.
So I just encourage our listeners, continue to pray for him. And I don't listen. I said this one other time, I think, that I didn't think that President Trump was a Christian. And I got, you know, people criticized me that you don't know the man's heart. That's true. I don't. I'm just going by his explanation for how you get to heaven is that you got to be good. And that seems.
And religion's a beautiful thing.
And religion's
when people
beautiful.
Talk in that language.
Yeah.
Okay. They're not.
I mean, he has said before that he's never repented for anything.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So
I think that is true. But that doesn't mean he can't be a good president.
Right. That's absolutely true.
You don't have to have perfect theology.
Right.
To be a good president.
Right.
Okay. So we're not hiring him to be, if you're going to vote for him, you're not hiring him to be your pastor.
Yes. As the current president indicates, proves, you don't have to have good theology to be president.
Exactly.
But it's a negative example
but
in the case of Joe Biden.
But yeah, clearly he doesn't understand the central part of the gospel message,
right?
Very well.
By the way, I'm also not denigrating the importance of obedience to the commandments of Christ once you have become a Christian. Okay, so I don't want anyone to accuse me of
okay, you little evangelical
antinomian.
You're just so cute.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. The word cute hasn't been used in reference to me in a very, very long time. I think since I was about two.
Got a great relationship with the evangelicals. I love the evangelicals. All right, what's your next story, Steve?
All right, well, let's stay with President Trump for a second. He's narrowing his list of vice presidential contenders. On the list, reportedly,
I've been hearing this for a year.
Well, just for what it's worth, we can do this, we can move on.
Okay, we're narrowing it down.
Yeah, so.
Because 6 months ago, he said, I have one picked out.
Yeah, he did say that.
He said, I got it picked.
Yeah.
We never heard from him again.
It might have been Chris.
We're back to picking.
Might have been Chrissy Noman, her dead dog. I don't know. But
that's on Steve right there.
I
didn't need that imagery.
ABC
All right, so,
News.
So now he's saying again that he has somebody picked out.
ABC
right?
News is reporting that their campaign is getting a close look at three candidates, North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, Senator J.D. Vance from Virginia, and Senator Marco and Senator Marco Rubio of Florida. Those are the three. They also say that the officials have requested information from Tim Scott, Byron Donalds, Elise Stefanik, and Ben Carson. But I think, according to ABC, they're narrowing it down to these three.
What does the governor of North Dakota bring to the table?
Well, that's a good question.
What's his name?
Doug Burgum.
Doug Burgum.
Nice guy. I saw him on the debate stage a couple times.
He ran for president.
Very smart guy.
Well,
I don't know what he brings to the table.
He's a wealthy businessman, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, but you got to bring more than money.
No, I'm just saying maybe Trump likes him because he has the same type of ideas for reviving the economy. I don't know.
Well, what about J.D. Vance is the senator from Ohio. and Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida. You know what? Picking Rubio, though, you're going to have to deal with the same state issue, which is prohibited by the Constitution. That is, you can't have a president and a vice president who are residents of the same state. I mean, that's what I've heard. I don't know how you get around with that unless Trump identifies as a New Jersey resident or New York resident. But anyway, that's interesting. Those three names you said are the last three men standing.
According to the ABC News.
You know what? I bet Rubio gets the pick out of those because he's probably closer to Trump than those two other fellows. But I'm just guessing. Listen, I was a Marco Rubio supporter in 2016.
Yeah?
He was my first choice. And no, I take that back. Ted Cruz was my first choice.
Yeah.
Marco Rubio was my second choice back in 16.
Right.
But little Marco, that's Trump's name. That was Trump's name for him. Remember that? Little Marco?
Yes.
Making fun of his small stature?
Right.
Little Marco, that would be interesting if he's picked as. Why are you laughing?
I'm laughing because if you are picked and agreed to be President Trump's vice president, how do you handle that? In other words, when they're up on the stage at the convention, and Donald Trump turns and says, "Come on up here, little Marco."
I mean, I don't think he would say it if he becomes his VP candidate.
Okay, but all right.
But if I were little Marco, I would just say, hey, make fun if you want to, but Napoleon Bonaparte was a short dude, and see what he accomplished.
Actually, Napoleon was average height.
Oh, is that for his time?
For his time.
For his era.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll see. It could be Marco Rubio, J.D. Vance, or... What's the gentleman?
Burgum.
What's the governor's name from North Dakota?
John Burgum, is it? Is it John?
Doug.
You there, Steve?
I'm sorry, Doug. Doug. Yeah, I'm sorry. Doug Burgum. I am right. Here. I'm here. I was looking
right,
up
we
the
got
height.
A minute, we got a minute, minute and a half left. Where you got over
I was
Steve.
Looking up the height of Napoleon, who was, they say he was
I thought Napoleon
feet.
Was like 5'5 or something.
Yeah. But at the time of his death, the French might have recorded his height in French inches, which were a little longer than English inches.
Oh, so he was actually shorter?
No, taller.
Oh, taller, okay.
Because they put him at 5'2", but he was probably
all right, then I don't
five,
know what,
five,
I don't
five,
know
five,
what little Marco says then.
5'5" or 5'6".
I got no answer for him.
All right, I got us off track there with
go
the
ahead.
Phone apart.
We got a minute to go, Steve. You got anything that would edify people?
I it's going to be hard to get to the last story I had because it's about the Nashville shooter. They're trying to get release of his... manifesto. They still haven't been able to get rid of that.
I thought it was a girl.
Her. It was.
Yeah.
Sorry. But
it was a girl who said she was a dude.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the FBI and Nashville Police are holding on to that. They don't want to release the manifesto.
Yeah, because they don't want to make a transgender look bad.
Okay, that's
gotta
why.
Just get to cut to the chase.
Yeah.
So to speak. All right.
But their reasoning is terrible. That's the story.
Maybe we have time to get back to that another time. But anyway. All right, folks. Thanks for listening to American Family Radio. We don't care how tall or short you are, people.
Right.
Huh? We don't care. We invite you to listen each and every day to this program.
You may have to step on a box, get near the radio. No, I'm just kidding. Did I say that?
All right. Have a great day. See you next time. We'll